On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Hey, look at that.
Did I do it right?
She knows.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
Hello and welcome to Tall Can Audio. I am Michaela. He is Matt. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You, of course, can find me on Twitter at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. I appreciate you coming back to slum with us a little bit after a few days back on the radio, where you can really find Michaela is on TSN 1200, apparently 10 to 2 for the last couple of days. So that's been kind of fun. I'm doing good. And I'm glad you've still got time for us.
Of course. You never forget your roots.
Sure. The ones that light up here is really the important part.
Oh, exactly. And I went to crack a beer at the beginning of each show, and then I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing?
I think AJ allowed it.
First of all.
Well, the way you get up, it's mid-afternoon for some people.
That's very true. Like, for those of you who don't know, I am a certified morning person, and which made the 10 to 2 slot kind of perfect because I was able to do a little bit of my regular full-time job and still get up early enough to do research. Well prepared for being on the air.
Yeah.
But the Ottawa Senators, we'll get into this in a bit, but the Ottawa Senators schedule just really didn't take my personal needs into account this year.
They rarely do, eh?
And, you know, they had a 10 p.m. game on Monday night, which, okay, that's fine. But then they had an 8 p.m. game on Wednesday, which I can deal with. That's a little later than I'd like, but I can deal with that. And now they have another 10 p.m. game tonight on Thursday as we record this.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, I'm not on the air on Friday. I don't need to stay up for it. Now I just found out I'm going to be on the air next week on Tuesday and Wednesday again, 10 till 2. And the Sens play yet again Sunday at 9 p.m. and Tuesday at 10 p.m. So thank you very much, Ottawa, for that. I will never sleep again.
Like you said, we'll get into the Sens and stuff later on. How are you holding up with these late starts? Because I do know anything that starts later than the Wheel of Fortune is going to be a problem for you. And
oh, absolutely.
And so this has been a rough week. And then staying up, you know, to watch them kind of get crushed can't be making it any easier. How are you holding up this week? That you got the radio thing. You got the regular full-time job thing. How's it going? You holding strong? You doing all right here? Yes.
That should tell you everything you need to know about how it's going.
I knew you would follow me. I knew I was teeing you up. I knew I was setting it up, and I knew you'd go. That's perfect.
It's a lob ball. I love it. You know what? If it the staying up late is one thing, and I can do it temporarily. I'm someone who prioritizes sleep. Like I will not sacrifice my 8 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. So I'll adjust and I'll let myself sleep in a bit. And I actually ended up taking off fully the days I'm on the air next week. So I don't have to do my full-time job on the same days.
Okay.
So I can stay up till, you know, it's usually about 1 o'clock in the morning by the time those 10 p.m. games wrap up, and then I can sleep in.
Right.
But it's like it's the next night that throws me off. So what would have been not last night, the night before, or Tuesday night, I'm dealing with the residual effects of not getting enough sleep and then trying to go to bed at a decent time and I can't fall asleep. And then no matter what, my mind is just like, well, it's 5:30 a.m. You must be awake now.
Right.
And so I can't sleep in no matter what. basically, I'm in a really good place. I'm really in need of a beer. So I'll get into what I'm drinking in a bit. But important question, Matt, what are you drinking?
Ah, well, I appreciate you letting me go first. But this is one that I know you've had on the show before. And as you know, 2 weeks ago, you were given the ultimate power of deciding where I would be ordering from next, and you selected the Ridge Rock Brewing Company, a beautiful choice. This is, today I'm going with their DDH, the Double Dry Hopped Simcoe IPA, which...
Nice.
Yeah, see, I thought so. I thought that was one that you had suggested a time or two or had on here early on, and I've never had it before, so this will be my first pull on it.
It's a very, very good IPA. Like, I think I've said this before, but their APA is one of my favorite, but every like pale ale IPA based beer I've ever had from them has been one of my favorites in that category. Like it's always super tasty.
This is, it's very juicy, which it says right in the description. So should be no surprise there. A little bit more citrus than is my style. Although any IPA is a little outside of my normal wheel of influence, if we want to call it that, because I got the little hamster on the wheel in my brain running as hard as he can, but he's struggling today to come up with words, which is going to be a problem on a podcast. I don't mind it, but it's not going to be, you know, a regular return to. They say this is about a 6%. It's everything that it says it's going to be. It's juicy, it's hazy, it's a New England style IPA. It's got a little bit of citrus to it, so I knew what I was getting into, but you know, if regular listeners kind of feel like they relate to me a little bit, you know, some of yous do, some of yous don't, this is a little bit more citrus than I would probably typically go in for. So they tell you that right up front, so nothing against the brewery on it, but yeah, that's probably my first reaction to this. What do you got going on today?
So I am so excited about what I have today. I have been trying to get beer from it. I have been trying to get beer from this brewery for I don't even know how long, but every single time I've tried, they haven't had enough beer, or they were still waiting on some to finish, or they were closed and I just could never find a time to go that worked. But I'm drinking Conspiracy Theories Cousin Yeti Pale Ale.
Ooh, okay.
I got a surprise delivery from a certain Leafs fan who I live with, who Leafs came home today. Yeah, every now and then they have their qualities. And he came home today saying, I have a surprise. And it was a basically like case of the Conspiracy Theory beer, because he stopped by on his way home from work and they were open and had beer. And he's just like, stock up. I've never had this beer before, but
nice.
Stock up. So I'm drinking their Cousin Yeti Pale Ale. I've had a couple sips of it so far, and it's very tasty. It's different though. It's almost kind of closer to a cream ale.
Oh yeah.
Than a pale ale. Like with pale ale, you never know what you're going to get.
No.
Like it could be a mild IPA. It could be a lager in like closer to a lighter beer. It could be something like this where it's a little like maltier and darker.
Yeah.
It's a tasty beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very wide sweeping category, and it's tasty. I like it.
Yeah, I had the other day, if you're interested actually in such things, Kevin Mickey from Sportsnet was on with me on Wednesday morning. That'd be episode 782, I believe. You can go back and check that out. We were talking wrestling, the Royal Rumble this Sunday. So if wrestling's your bag, you can go back and check that out. I was having the Vimy Cream Ale, and I love Vimy, but I'd never had their cream before. And it reminded me, kind of similar to what you're saying, of more of a pale ale, which again has like this wide open interpretation where you could be getting a lot of different things in there, and I didn't mind it, but I'll be sticking more when it comes to Vimy. I love their red and their stout, and that will still be more where I lean moving forward, but it was a pretty good beer as well. But I know what you're saying, right? Sometimes when you get into that pale ale kind of thing, you're like, man, I don't know exactly and what's going to happen here, and there's some fun to that sometimes, right? Like a little adventurousness, a little let's see what we're going to get. But there is something to be said also for knowing exactly what you're going to get out of a beer. And like I said, this one I got here, it's delivering everything it promised in the label. So a couple of not bad selections. I've only had one or two things out of the Conspiracy Theory Brewery. Have you had more than that? Like, are you more familiar with their stuff?
No, I've been trying forever to get it, and this is the first time I tried it, and we got like an IPA. I think we got a couple reds.
Oh, nice.
I believe there is, what else did we have in there? I think we've got a cream ale in there as well. So I'm looking forward to making my way through that.
Sweet.
I do have to ask you. I'm told that I have to ask you a wrestling question.
Is this from the beautiful Leaf fan in your house?
It is. This Leaf fan is also a wrestling fan.
God,
apparently,
love him. He's a good guy.
Here's the thing. He's a Leaf fan, so the gifts he brings come with a price. And in exchange for him bringing me this beer, I must now watch the Royal Rumble.
Nice. Okay. So next week, I'll be asking for your Royal Rumble thoughts after.
Oh, I'm going to need more beer. My question to you, Matt, is who do you think is going to win the Royal Rumble, both in the men's and the women's division? That's as interested as I can sound.
I appreciate your forced enthusiasm. For the women, I think it makes a lot of sense this year because she hasn't done it before. And this is one of the things when we talk normal sports, right? Like who's the lovable or who's the favorite that might win the cup this year that everyone would be okay with or that would make sense? In wrestling, there's some guy sitting backstage who gets to write that, right? And he'll just, if it's a good story, he'll just tell it. Whereas in hockey, the stupid New Jersey Devils show up and play the trap and ruin everybody's good time. Charlotte Flair will win the Women's Royal Rumble, and she'll go on to main event another WrestleMania. She's by far the biggest star in the women's division right now. So I would imagine that's how that will go. And on the men's side, see, it's harder because I haven't been watching that much this year, but I know Daniel Bryan is entering. He's a crowd favorite. He's never won the Royal Rumble before. He's one of the biggest stars that they have. So to me, those will be the two. It'll be Daniel Bryan and it will be Charlotte Flair. I know you will be stoked to be watching on Sunday to find out if I'm correct or not. Yeah. Hey, look at that. She knows.
Did I do it right?
She knows.
Can you tell that I'm involuntarily exposed to wrestling nonstop? Like, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And can reference them. And like, this is the thing. I make a lot of jokes about wrestling. It's not my thing, but like, I get the appeal of it, and I don't criticize people who watch it. I like to joke with my husband a lot because it's like if I watched baseball around him. Or Sex and the City around him. Like, one of those things that I love and I'm very passionate about, but he has no interest in whatsoever. So for every wrestling event I have to watch, I've got to find some way to make him pay. And I'm still working on that. But I do know it. Like, I know the references. I know some of the people. So, I mean, I can't form an opinion on it because I really don't care. But, like, I do know the references every now and then, which, again, there's storage in my brain taken up by this.
Sure. No, and the Royal Rumble is one of those things where it briefly for a week or two, you know, wrestling fans know, and even casual fans who used to love it as teenagers or whatever know that WrestleMania is their Super Bowl. That's their big thing. But the Royal Rumble has more of a crossover appeal because everyone understands the concept. There's 1,000 people in the ring at the same time and you get thrown over the top rope, both feet hit the floor. You don't have to know what crazy soap opera they were telling a month ago or what weird storylines. It's an easier thing to follow. And so a lot of people who watched wrestling like myself, like crazy as a teenager and even a little bit longer than that. And now I'm more just kind of a dip in and out thing. I'm not nearly as big of a fan, but when the Rumble comes around, I'm still like, yeah, I'm going to check that out. And so, yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. But it's no different than anything else, right? It goes through its phases where comic book nerds used to be like the ultimate geek, and then those movies got huge for a little while, right? Like they were churning out this unbelievable product where they were the biggest movies ever for a while, and then it was, or before that maybe it was Lord of the Rings, and you know, all these different things that were for geeks, right? But people get into it and it explodes, and wrestling has these phases where it's kind of this niche underground whatever thing, and people hardly admit that they still watch it. And then it goes through phases where it's really big. And right now it's in one of its downswings, and that's okay. But it comes and goes, and that's fine. But I am one of those wrestling nerds.
That is kind of the way it played out in my life, in that I knew Josh was a wrestling fan when he was a kid. It was kind of something that just, you know, simmered in his life. And then all of a sudden, I remember maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, he started watching it regularly out of nowhere. And like, we've been living together for 3 or 4 years at the time. And I was like, what is this?
What's happening right now?
And so it's just been this new part of my life. I have to adapt to.
I get that. I'm so stoked for next week's show now. I can't wait to ask you about your post Royal Rumble thoughts.
I'm going to need so many beers. That's okay. Anyway, on to some real sports.
Sure.
Just kidding. Let's get one kind of milestone out of the way. The Athletic turned 5 today.
Yesterday, I believe.
Yesterday. Yeah. Okay. Happy birthday, Athletic.
Sure. And not the Athletic Brewing Company.
Not the Athletic Brewing Company. No, this is the sports news website that I guess stormed onto the scene. I remember so distinctly when it came on to – when it started getting really big and we started losing people from other outlets to the Athletic. Mm-hmm. Like you start seeing those tweets of some personal news. I have joined the Athletic. And
everyone,
I mean,
here's why I've joined the Athletic. Like, all right, we get it.
I know. And it hit Ottawa very recently with Ian Mendez joining the Athletic, which has been I'm an Athletic subscriber.
Me
I have
too.
Been for a couple of years. And as a sports fan, I love it.
Yep.
Ian covering the Sens has been, Haley Salvian was awesome. And she's doing a great job
terrific.
In Calgary.
Yeah.
Ian coming in and just kind of kept that ball rolling. And, the Sens have always had, really good coverage on the Athletic from a local perspective. So I'm a big fan of the Athletic, but it did kind of, it shifted the sports journalism field quite a bit. I don't know where you stand on that.
I'm a subscriber like you. I got in reasonably early after it moved to Toronto. Once Myrtle got involved, that gave it some credibility in the Leafs market, obviously. And I enjoy it. I think over the number, it kind of started with this, I wouldn't say lesser known, because in different markets, and you had guys who covered, and I'm, speaking honestly when I say guys, because that was one of the criticisms early, was there was not a lot of diversity in their hiring. And that has improved over the years, but early on they brought in a lot of guys, and in some markets it was some lesser known writers and reporters, but then they started grabbing some big names. And I remember Myrtle being one of the ones who jumped out at me, and I can't remember for sure whether he was writing for the Globe and Mail at the time or whoever, but it was a big name to see jump to this other thing. And then it started to expand across Canada. And as a sports fan, who's willing to pay a couple bucks a month, and depending on which promotion you signed up in, and we're all paying slightly different prices, but to me it's been worth the money all along. But I understand the problems that come with it, and that's that a lot of people, as you suggested a few minutes ago, are being pulled out of other places. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the death of the newspaper sports section. And did this speed it up, or did people jump to something else that they thought was going to be a more secure landing space? I think for the hardcore sports fan, the Athletic is a worthwhile monthly subscription. But I wonder what it's done to the casual sports fan who just picks up the paper every week. And I wonder, you and I both subscribe, we both enjoy it. Do you think it's been good for the industry?
That's a good question. I don't think I ever really looked at it like that. Like, I'll be honest, I'm a little old school. I had a paper newspaper subscription up until about a couple years ago.
Right.
But I pay for a Globe and Mail subscription. Mm-hmm. I pay for New York Times, and I pay for The Athletic. Like, I'm a believer in paying for news that's provided to me. And I get that The Athletic is a deeper dive, and it's, if you're a casual in and out sports fan, you're probably not paying.
No.
I think it's 70 bucks. I think I pay 70 bucks a year or something like that
for
The Athletic.
Yeah.
You're probably not paying that. I still think, turn on SportsCenter, you're getting the same, pretty much the same kind of content, maybe less highlight-y than it used to be, more storyline-based, more narrative and panels and stuff like that. But even when I was a newspaper subscriber, long before The Athletic came in, and this is where I have a hard time putting myself in the mind of like a fringe sports fan. Like, I never turned to a newspaper for sports coverage because it was always crap. Like, I read the Globe and Mail every morning. I would literally, with all due respect to their sports writers, it's just I've never found it helpful for me. But that's not their target audience.
No.
I know Myrtle was there for a while, and I actually did like what he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But I never used the Ottawa Citizen or the Globe and Mail for my sports coverage. I just always turned to TSN and SportsCenter.
Right.
Like that, not to be on brand. I know I work for TSN, but that's literally who I went to.
Sure.
And I know that social media has changed that. And even SportsCenter has had to, you know, rearrange. There was actually a piece, ironically,
in the Athletic. I saw that too.
This week.
Yeah. Sean Fitzgerald.
About how Sportsnet and TSN have kind of changed their highlight show models because of social media.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have a good enough perspective on how the newspaper industry changed because I never really followed it before. All I know is that the Ottawa Sun or the Sun, you know, media newspapers, not good for like regular news, but always had really in-depth sports coverage from what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah,
if there was a newspaper I went to for sports, it was that.
No, it's true. And I wrestle with it a little bit because why not have a subscription where I want you to go a little more in depth on the behind the scenes stuff during the pandemic, especially. And I'll really only speak for the Leaf side of it because that's where I fall. But Jonas Siegel and James Myrtle and a lot of the people around there did some really cool in-depth stuff. And as a Leaf fan, everybody laughs at the Jeff Finger signing, right? That went terribly and he only lasted like a year and then he was a Marley. And they did this piece on like why that happened and they talked to him about what he's doing with his life now and why it didn't go well and what that time in Toronto did to him mentally, right? Like it was hard on him to come in with that contract and not be any good. And so they do these deep dives that there was just never going to be any time for in the Star or the Globe and Mail or whatever. So I feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of it. But you look at it from a standpoint, and the two names that stand out to me, regardless of what you think of them, are Ken Rosenthal on baseball and Pierre LeBrun on hockey. And it kind of went from this place where we had these guys that we liked in each market and we felt like they had a good handle on it. And then they started bringing in these national writers. And I like Ken Rosenthal especially, and I'm fine with Pierre LeBrun. But it changed the model a little bit. And now those guys who are kind of, especially Ken Rosenthal, who was kind of ubiquitous across baseball, he would be everywhere. And now he's not. He's behind a paywall. And those kind of, you know, insider things that he does are usually now restricted to people who subscribe to The Athletic. And as someone who does, I'm good with that. I just wonder if it's really been a good thing or if it maybe has expedited the death of the sports page when it comes to regular newspapers. And newspapers, you know, local and regional ones across the board have been begging for, you need to subscribe, you need to support local news. And I agree with that on the local news thing. But when it comes to sports now, I don't, right? Like, I don't need to subscribe to the Star to get my Leafs news. I subscribe to the Athletic. And now is that a less of incentive to subscribe to the Star in general? Because one of the reasons I was doing it was for sports, and now that's been pulled away. I just wonder. It's just an interesting kind of dynamic as we shift and continue down this, you know, more segregated, behind paywalled, you should pay for your news, and I'm happy to pay for this. What did that do to the actual newspaper that we should care more about?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, anybody who was subscribing to local newspapers motivated by sports, like, I'm sure this, if it hasn't already, probably will have an effect on them at some point.
Yeah.
I look at the Ottawa market and you know, admittedly, that's really the only market I have a good handle on right now. And it seems like the Citizen still does quite a bit of Sens coverage. And of course, Bruce Gerriak is there and Ken Warren. And, you know, they have good relationships with the team. They do in-depth pieces, also kind of highlight game summary based pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a market in the Ottawa Valley, where I grew up, who, like, you know, the older folks who are probably never, if they haven't heard of the Athletic, they're certainly not going to go out of their way to learn about it. There's, as long as they are around, a publication like the Citizen probably won't have much of a problem selling papers to them.
Right.
But the, you know, when your target audience is an aging group, mm-hmm. your days are numbered, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
So that, you know, that's there are certain risks in having an older target audience for sure. And I think, you know, did the Athletic maybe expedite that a little bit for some markets? I think mm-hmm. there's probably an argument to be made. I've always really liked the Athletic for those more in-depth pieces on like anything Katie Strang writes, for yeah. example, yeah. I will go out of my way to read. Right. That $70 I spend a year is worth it for the article she writes alone. Like yeah. she is that good.
She is very good.
Anytime something you know, controversial happens, anytime, you know, and it's sports, it happens a lot. Anytime there is an instance of sexism, which again, it's sports, this happens a lot.
Yeah.
Katie is a very trusted voice who, you know, she's done some human interest pieces on like individual players and their drug abuse that, like, I think it took me 20 minutes to read an article and I was like completely lost in it. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said for getting lost in an article yeah. that's really fun, you know, like sitting down, having a cup of coffee and just, you know, burying yourself in an in-depth piece. And that's one thing that I really, really enjoy with The Athletic. And, you know, I never got that with any other newspaper I read. And admittedly, I never read the Toronto Star much for sports. And I know they were well known for that, but even in the Sun, like those who are going to the Sun for sports, like you're not getting those in-depth pieces. You're getting the highlights and the scores. And
right.
You know, I remember going to the Sun to check the standings. What a weird world.
No, it's true. Squinting away at it. Is that Toronto down at 13th again? Yeah, there they are. Yeah.
Points to the Sun team. So no, happy birthday, Athletic.
Yeah, no, and to me, it's just an interesting thing. I'm kind of a geek for the sports media side of things as much as anything else. So you're so right. When an Ian Mendez goes to the Athletic, is that good for the Athletic? Yeah. Is that good for the rest of, you know, a small market like Ottawa when it comes to pro sports to have another one of the most prominent voices under that umbrella and not talking to us every day on the radio? I don't know. If it was good for Ian and it was good for me as an Athletic subscriber, that's really as far as most people will think about it. And I'm happy for him. I'm not sure that it was great to remove that voice from the free airwaves of the radio. That's all.
As someone who works for TSN 1200, I will say I miss Ian Mendez.
Of course. Yeah.
But I do. He does. He unfortunately, I still have his cell phone number and he doesn't get to escape me.
No, I'm the same way. Every now and then I still get to text him. Just be like, what do you think? What do you think? And he's taken screen caps before of his messages, like that little bubble that pops up and there's like 143 unread text messages. He's like, oh, man, I'm probably at the bottom of that. Right? Like,
his home screen gives me anxiety.
I know. It's crazy.
I remember working with him and I'm going to like. Call him out a little bit, or not call him out, but like, I don't know if he's revealed this before. I remember working with him at TSN 1200 and he would like draw attention to his inbox and there's like thousands yes. of unread emails. And as someone who spends more than eight hours a day chasing inbox zero, I can't, like, I'm tense right now just talking about it. Like, I need to remind him to delete his emails because yeah. it's keeping me up at night.
No, I'm totally with you there.
I miss Ian Mendez a lot.
And while we're on that subject of TSN 1200, maybe we should mention next Wednesday morning, the boss man over at TSN, Michaela's boss. We're going to ask him to give a performance review, a job review of Michaela's right here on Tall Can Audio because John Rodenberg, JR, as we call him around Ottawa, he will be on TCA next Wednesday morning. So we'll hope you'll check that out as well. I bug JR every now and then just to come in, listen to these, tell him or tell me what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong. There's a lot more of the latter than the former. He's a good guy and has a handle on the sports media business in Ottawa like very few others and just the market in general. So really looking forward to talking to JR next week.
And I look forward to drinking several beers while I listen to my performance review. I will also mention that JR is a stand-up guy and a great boss, just to in case that
grease the wheels a little. Yeah. I get that. You
know, I bug him quite a bit too, because I'm constantly like, hey, so what's going on with that? So she said, what's going on now? Yeah. What's going on now? So he knows a thing or two of being bugged by me, but I will be honest in saying he's a great guy, and he's helped me a lot in my time at TSN 1200, just learning the ropes and giving me freedom to learn, which I think is probably the biggest thing. Like I fear going back to listen to some of the early episodes of That's What She Said. I'm sure I sounded terrible, but you know, he let us have some freedom, have some runway to, he always says to me, like, it's all about getting reps in. It's all about getting, you know, practice. And I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity with TSN 1200 to do that, and even moving into like pregame shows and now on, you know, in the box every now and then, or the drive when I'm kind of like the fill-in person,
right?
Which I'm fine with, and I really, really like. So he's given me a lot of faith, and that's actually helped me, I think, become a better broadcaster, because the only way you're going to learn is by putting a mic in front of your face and talking.
I promise to play that for him before he does your performance review, so that the wheels will be appropriately greased before.
Good. Thank you. Speaking of my time at TSN 1200 this week, we had a lot to talk about. It was a very busy week in the world of sports. We're going to kind of get into that. But one thing that I will hit on first is the NWHL season is underway at this point. It's kind of a fast and furious season. It's all taking place in the bubble in Lake Placid, basically 2 weeks between regular season and playoffs. And it all got kicked off this past weekend. So we had a couple guests on to talk about that, talk about how the games are going. But there was some pretty big news this afternoon in that the Metropolitan Riveters, who were sitting comfortably at number two in the league, have pulled out of the rest of the season because of COVID concerns. And I know it sounds really crazy when you say, like, you know, a team completely removed themselves from the season, but given that the season is so short,
it's 2 weeks long,
and then you think of like 14-day quarantines, like, there's your season. So, you know, it's a bummer. It's a huge bummer, especially because the Riveters were doing so well. But they've unfortunately pulled out of the season. And yet there was a little drama in the world of the NWHL this week.
Yeah. This is the thing that caught my attention. And I saw, like you, that they were pulling out today. And I was immediately concerned, because admittedly I was uneducated on this a bit, and I like a lot of people, I tuned into, I think it was Saturday, the first Toronto Six game. I wanted to see what that was all about, and like I said a little while ago, I'm a nerd for just sports media broadcasting and things like that, so I want to check this out and see what they're doing. It was being broadcast on Twitch, which, for those unfamiliar, is largely for video games. They get on and people talk live, and you know, it's there. I'm not necessarily one of them, and I don't totally understand how it works, but there are people out there with hundreds of thousands of followers to watch them play whatever game they're good at. And that esports world is something I haven't totally wrapped my head around yet. It's not a judgmental thing, it's just a thing I don't understand. You know, in terms of, I loved playing video games. I hated when it wasn't my turn and watching other people play video games. So I had a hard time kind of getting into the Twitch thing, but it's huge. It's gigantic. And so without a broadcast deal, the NWHL turned to Twitch, and it looked like they were doing some pretty strong numbers in terms of streaming. And so I wanted to check out the Toronto Six. And so they lost their first game. I watched their second game, which I believe, in typical Toronto sports fashion, I believe they're up 4-1 or 5-1, ended up losing in overtime. You're like, I relate to this team suddenly. I you will fit in nicely here in Toronto. And then they got on the board and started playing a little better. So I was following it, and I was paying attention to how this was going to go. And then I saw this blow up that you're going to have to explain to me a little bit between the NWHL and Barstool, and I guess it's their CEO who's been this outspoken person in support of, but also making people look bad at. And so when I saw today, just briefly, and I want to hand this back to you because you're going to be far more informed on this than I am. When I saw today that the Metropolitan Riveters were pulling out, there was a moment where I was like, oh no, right? Like, is this a PR thing? Like, are they the ones, is there somehow they're tangled up in this and we're just going to get out of here to draw the bad attention away? And it sounds silly, but I was relieved to hear it was health related. And obviously I'm hoping everybody's okay and they're just limiting exposure and we're going to pull out. And like you said, you can't do a 14-day quarantine in a 2-week bubble league. But explain to me exactly what happened this week between the NWHL and Barstool.
Whew, okay. So this,
well, I sit back and put my feet up for a minute.
Yeah, this is going to take a while. I'm going to try and succinct it up as much, if that's a word,
sure,
as
much as I up. Can.
Let's succinct it up. I'm going to try and keep things brief because I know obviously, like, you know, we only have so many hours on this podcast.
Right.
And a lot happened and it's very complicated. But basically, here's the gist as I understand it. So Barstool Sports. Let's just get this out of the way. Not the greatest organization.
No, they're trash.
And they are often associated, and this is like, you can go back and look at I hate to say look at the tape, but you can go back and look at the tape. Like their founder has been associated with white supremacists, and mm-hmm. he has used racial slurs mm-hmm. in public before, and still to this day does not see why that's a problem. They are basically known for doing the opposite of what the Hockey Is for Everyone slogan tries to do, right? They are continuously creating a very uncomfortable space for anybody who's not a straight white dude.
Right.
And that's the reputation they have. So over the last couple of weeks, there's been a number of NWHL players who had been in interviews with Barstool platforms. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which podcast exactly, but like some of their platforms had featured NWHL players. So the writers who have been covering the NWHL and the CWHL and women's hockey for years took issue with this. They weren't overly happy that the NWHL was associating themselves with Barstool because oftentimes it's mostly women who are covering women's hockey yeah. and we're not made to feel overly comfortable with Barstool.
Right.
So they called the NWHL out. They said, what is this? Why is the NWHL associating themselves with Barstool? Why are some of the players associating themselves with Barstool? I know it wasn't the league. And in response to that, Erica Nardini, who's the CEO of Barstool, released a video where she basically had screen grabs of these people who were calling her out with their full handles in it. Like everything was visible in the video saying, why is everybody calling me out? I'm just trying to raise the profile of women's hockey. Mm-hmm. She's interested in buying a team. She was sharing that information. But, you know, this is kind of what Barstool is known for. The result of that video was the rabid supporters of Barstool then went and attacked everybody who was listed in this video.
Yeah.
And I want to make a clear distinction between the quote unquote attacking that Barstool claims people were doing to Erica Nardini and to Barstool for their association with the NWHL and the actual attacking yes. that Barstool supporters were doing, right? Criticizing a move and saying, I want an explanation for why this was done mm-hmm. is not the same as sending racist, homophobic, and sexist slurs at people on Twitter, threats at people on Twitter, which right. is what these supporters of Barstool were doing to the people who cover the NWHL and who were featured in this video. So the people who were featured in this video, like some of them had to make themselves private on yeah. Twitter so they would no longer get harassed constantly by Barstool supporters. And so that's kind of where the catalyst of this all happened. It was all in the matter of like 48 hours or something that this all went down. And there's been a lot that's happened since. The founder of Barstool released a quote unquote emergency press conference. And this is where a lot of people are criticizing Barstool in that instead of looking at this and saying, okay, how can we have an open dialogue about our coverage and our products and our platforms and how they can be more inclusive and be a more welcoming environment for hockey fans of all races and backgrounds and genders and sexual orientations. How can we make a safe space for everybody? They've gone on the defensive and are saying that basically everyone who called out Erica Nardini or Barstool Sports need to quote unquote grow a pair. And that, you know, they've threatened to start their own league because, again, this is what kills me. People who support Barstool and people who work for Barstool keep saying, well, we've done more for women's hockey than you ever have. Well, I've been covering women's hockey oftentimes for free for the last 10 years. You just got here.
Right.
You just got to the party. Where were you 7 years ago at the Clarkson Cup? Where were you 4 years ago in the press box at the Canadian Tire Center at the Clarkson Cup? I didn't see you there.
Right.
You don't tell me you've done more for women's hockey than we have. So that's one thing. But the one kind of storyline I guess like thread of this whole saga is Saroya Tinker, who plays for the Metropolitan Rivers, who unfortunately just pulled out of the rest of the season.
Yeah.
She was very vocal on Twitter of not supporting what was going on, not supporting Barstool, not wanting any affiliation with them, and really standing up for anything that the NWHL had done to associate themselves with them. Saroya Tinker is a Black woman, and she spoke out very bravely, spoke out against a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah, she knew she was about to take a beating.
Are known yet? Anyway. They're not known to be the friendliest of people when it comes to hockey and defending Barstool. And in his emergency press conference, the founder of Barstool said, "Well, she should be in jail." So I don't think I need to tell you what the optics of a white dude who has been associated with white supremacist stuff in the past telling a Black woman she should be in jail looks like.
Right.
But this is again, there's so much more I could get into, but that's kind of the gist of it. And it comes back to rather than create an open, like now Barstool is saying they're going to go and create their own women's league. Cause again, rather than support the existing women's league, we're going to take everything away from you with our platforms because you criticized us in some way. So rather than steer into this criticism and go, okay, how can we work together to actually grow the sport of women's hockey? We're going to take our ball and go home, and we're going to take everything you have with us.
Yeah.
That's basically the gist of how Barstool has chosen to approach this. I don't know how long that took me, but
no,
I think I wrapped it up quickly.
We needed that. I know I needed that because I've known for a very long time the Barstool and their stance on everything is almost always the exact opposite of mine. And so maybe that, you know, there are times where I'm just go, all right, well, I just disagree with these guys. And then there's other times you look and go, no, man, like you are so, you know, whether it's misogynistic, whether it's sexist, whether it's homophobic, these emergency press conferences that Dave Portnoy calls all the time, it's always trash. I'm always irritated. And it has this following, and it's exactly the following that you would suspect that it has. And I know in the hockey world, we get tangled up sometimes because of the Spittin' Chiclets podcast. And I have countless people on my Twitter feed, all of them dudes, that go, that's a good show. You don't have to love Barstool to love Spittin' Chiclets. And for a time I was just, all right, to each their own, right? And I'd leave it alone. But as it got more and more antagonistic, I became more and more like, no, this isn't okay anymore. And I guess the problem, and tell me for real, tell me if I have this right or wrong or whatever, is I sympathized at the beginning with the NWHL players who were going on these platforms because they're just doing their part to try and grow the league, to try and get the word out there. And I still didn't listen because I just can't. I don't listen to Barstool shit. It's just, you know, that's just the way I do things. But I didn't hold it against the players because it was just, I get it. You're trying to build awareness for this thing and get the word out there any way that you can. Maybe they were fine with it. Maybe they were uncomfortable with it, but they did it to do it. And then this week it blew up and it hit a certain point where enough supporters went, we don't want this. We don't want this to be tied to Barstool and their bullshit. And I guess my question, you know, is where did you stand at first? Like, were you similar to me in that you sympathized with the players who wanted to just do it and get it over with to get the word out there? Or was this always a problem for you even before this week where shit hit the fan? Like, am I out to lunch on kind of going, I get it, a necessary evil, you know, you go and you do it and you move on? Or was this always a problem?
That's a really good question, because for me, like, you're not out to lunch at all. And for me, it raised red flags.
Sure.
But, you know, stuff is complicated. Yes. And stuff is two things sometimes. And you can, you know, acknowledge that this platform is associated with some really awful stuff, but also acknowledge that this platform has a lot of reach. Yeah. And a lot of the people listening are the dudes whose opinions on women's hockey we need to change.
Right.
So there's an argument to be made that that may be a platform we should be reaching out to. And there's also probably an argument to be made that there may be some people – I wasn't even really aware of Barstool's overall like crappiness mm-hmm. until a couple of years ago. And mainly because I just didn't listen to or watch any of their stuff. Like I didn't really know much about Barstool. So if I'm a young female hockey player who, you know, is just trying to make a name for myself in the NWHL and I don't listen to a lot of hockey podcasts or follow much on social media, like it's reasonable to believe that some of these women may not have even known about Barstool's problems in the past. Right. So I don't fault the players at all. I've long said that, like, I sympathize with a lot of women's hockey players who are just trying to raise the profile of the sport, knowing full well it's not always easy to go about it in an absolutely perfect way.
Right.
Right. Like, there was a lot made about the U.S. women's hockey team when they went to the White House mm-hmm. after they won the gold medal in 2018. And I thought, like, listen, there's a million different reasons why someone may – I don't agree with them going to the White House, but there's a million different reasons why any one of them may have or may not have gone.
Right.
A number of them didn't go. A number of them chose not to go. But, like, again, we're often very conscious of the lack of leverage that we have as women in sports sometimes. And yep. And I'm not saying that doesn't mean you shouldn't stand up for what you believe in, but maybe, you know, some women feel that pressure and some women are terrified. You know, if you're Hillary Knight, you have leverage.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're like a fourth liner who just made the team and you're terrified of not having a future in this sport, like I who knows what's going through your head and whether or not, you know, is it as easy to, for you to stand up to your team or your management? No.
Probably not.
So again, like it's more complicated than a lot of people like to make it out to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
Right. So I
only have 240 characters or whatever.
Exactly. Twitter's not the place for nuance.
No, it's not.
Or like the complications of, you know, sometimes, and this is not a gotta see both sides argument, but there is a time where stuff can be two things mm-hmm. and stuff is complicated and it's not as cut and dry as we like to make it seem. You know, in certain topics, yes, it is. But in topics like this, I find it's much more complicated. And I don't necessarily criticize the players, and I'll be honest, I never saw those interviews.
Right.
I don't know the players who were associated with it. So I also don't have enough information to say definitively, yes or no, this was a bad thing.
Do you think this is, and maybe this is my last question on this, is do you think it's fair to hold men's and women's players to a different standard? And you mentioned the 2018 women's Olympic team that went to the White House and whether or not that was okay. That was a particularly controversial president, but the Penguins got roasted for going there, right, the second time when Trump was in office, and we wanted more out of Sidney Crosby. We wanted him to not go. At the same time, there was a huge percentage of people that wanted Tim Thomas to go in 2011 when he hated Barack Obama and he said, I'm not going, and he got roasted for that. When we look at you talk about in the women's game, Hillary Knight has more leverage than some young girl just coming up and you know, breaking the team for the first time and is, you know, maybe 17, 18 years old as a fourth liner versus Hillary Knight. You know, Hillary Knight has more leverage than that young kid, but maybe she still feels a responsibility to just get in front of this audience and try and grow the game. Whereas we can say to Sidney Crosby, you don't need to be on Spit and Chicklets or any Barstool platform. The NHL is not going to be grown anymore by going on an NHL-centric podcast by Sidney Crosby. Is it fair to hold the men to a higher standard to say, yeah, you'd make life a lot better for us if you weren't out there supporting this?
Yeah, I think that's fair because it's fair to hold them to a higher standard while they have more power.
The larger platform, right? Yeah.
You know, to quote Uncle Ben in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
But that is kind of what I'm getting at, right?
Agree. Like,
you carry weight. You have power. What Sidney Crosby says goes. Sidney Crosby would never do this because he has the personality of a rock. But yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But he would never stand up and say, like, I'm trying to think of like a wild opinion. We've never seen him stand up really for anything social justice related. But he could, and it would affect nothing in his life.
Right.
Right. Maybe a few white dudes in Pittsburgh wouldn't wear his jersey anymore. He still has a paycheck of $8.7 million a year. He still has all the clout. He doesn't have to pay for a drink in Pittsburgh or Canada for as long as he lives. He has that power.
Yeah.
Right? He is Sidney freaking Crosby.
Hillary Knight might have to do this. Sidney Crosby doesn't have to do this.
Exactly. And again, like I honestly can't remember if Hillary Knight even went to
sure. But we're just talking a high profile woman versus a high profile male. Marie-Philippe Poulin may have to go, this sucks, but for the good of the game, I'll do this. Sidney Crosby can go, no, your thing's trash. I'm not coming on.
Exactly. We make a lot of assumptions why people do or don't do things. We can't assume that these female hockey players have gone to the White House for any specific reason. You know,
right.
Maybe they are Trump's.
Sure.
Maybe some of them
no
are.
No doubt
Trump's
some
supporters.
Of them are. I have no doubt some are.
Like, Jesus, 48% of America
right.
still friggin' voted for him. So, like, you know, it's safe to assume that maybe
yep.
some of them just didn't feel like they had the power to stand up to it. Maybe they, and I'm not going to criticize someone for that because I've never been in that position.
Sure.
So I can't say that I would or wouldn't do it. I mean, like, I can say pretty safely I probably wouldn't, but like if my livelihood depended on it, I don't know.
Right.
Like I've never thankfully never had to make that choice, but like it's so complicated, right? And to answer your question and wrap it up, yeah, I think men are held to a higher standard because right now they're the ones in the position of power.
They kind of need to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it does bring me back to an interesting thing about Crosby. And I saw someone who had tweeted out, and this would be maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago now, you probably saw the same thing when it happened, that he had quietly donated enough money to buy all the equipment for a women's league in Nova Scotia that was made up of Black and Indigenous women. Mm-hmm. So you know where he stands. You know what his feelings are on these things, but he doesn't say them, right? It's bad for business. It's bad for press. And it brings me back. We all saw that that documentary in March about Michael Jordan there, The Last Dance. And they wanted him to come out against, I can't remember, was it the Republican guy running for president or something at the time? And he said, hey, Republicans buy shoes too, because he had that big Nike deal, right? Which is going to be bad for business to speak out against it. I think we know how Sidney Crosby feels. But Sidney Crosby could be far more helpful if he would say it publicly instead of making these quiet gestures and these. Not that those aren't important, not that those aren't appreciated, but you could really help some people out if you just say it. And maybe he's just not that guy. So
that, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that Sidney Crosby not using his power is a good thing. Like when you look back on your life, do you want to be able to say you did the right thing and you
right.
stood up for the right causes? And has he done some great things? Absolutely.
Sure.
But did you use your power to
right.
the,
yeah.
you know, the best of its abilities?
Right.
I don't know. You know, can no. you answer it? You know, how is he going to answer that question one day is all I'm saying.
Agreed. Completely.
So that's a fun topic that we've been dealing with.
Well, I appreciate you clearing it up for me because it is complicated.
It's such a hard thing to talk about because
yeah.
even what I've said right now, I'm going over in my head. Like, I'm going to get attacked by Barstool people and I'm also probably going to get attacked by anti-Barstool people for saying that it's complicated in the first place.
It's
right?
It is, though.
It
you is. Said, you said it perfectly. It's... I'm complimenting you for saying it perfectly. I can't remember what you said. It can be two things at once, right? Things aren't black and white. There's a million miles of gray in the middle to be untangled, and it's hard. it is fair to have different expectations of one group than another based on their position, based on their privilege, based on their platform. These things are not the same to everybody. So it is fair to have different expectations.
Exactly. Privilege comes with a cost.
Certainly.
And this is it at times. So the Jays.
Yeah. Just easy, silly sports. Let's do that for a while.
Yeah. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it because it is an important issue and we need to continue supporting women's hockey. That's, you know what, if we walk away from this with anything, it's that please continue to support women's hockey.
Yeah.
Because those women that you and I acknowledge that most of the most high profile women in hockey right now are not playing in the NWHL,
yeah.
Right? They're part of the PWHPA and they're boycotting North American leagues right now. So that's another added layer of complication to all this.
We'll save
right?
that for next week, maybe.
Honestly,
you were rocking some of their gear before firing up on the radio this week. Yeah. I saw that. That was cool.
PWHPA blue hoodie came in this week, and it is my favorite thing on the planet.
That's awesome.
Me and Freddie and Mitch Martin.
Yes, looking good. Great trio.
There you go. So the Blue Jays did some things this week.
Yeah.
And when I say did some things, I mean did all the things.
Yeah, they're not slowing down.
They're not slowing down. We talked about George Springer last week.
Mm-hmm.
And this week they've made a couple of big signings, but one of the biggest ones that has, I believe it's been confirmed, but maybe not by the team, but it has been reported that they signed Marcus Semien to a 1-year, $18 million deal. And all reports are saying that he's an infielder. He's likely going to play second base.
Yep.
Potentially moving Cavan Biggio out, but he also has played shortstop in his career. In fact, I believe that's what he was with the A's. So he's added a little bit of depth for in case Bo Bichette ever gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, you know, a lot has been made about this signing in terms of like his numbers in 2020 versus his numbers in 2019. But a lot of money on a 1-year, in my opinion, kind of prove it to me contract.
I wish someone had asked me to prove it for $18 million.
I would gladly,
yeah.
Whatever it is. What do you want proved to you? Let me try.
Well, it doesn't even matter. Like, even if I don't, I'll just live on $18
million. $18 million. It's not bad.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me, as you suggest, Marcus Semien, a shortstop, basically since 2015, 2014, like, he is a shortstop. At least he wants to be. And with the infield coming up in Oakland, they were hesitant to commit to him. And $18 million, as I kind of made light of, you're totally right. It's a show-me contract. But, man, what a show-me contract, right? Because he would have gone into this offseason expecting kind of $25 million or whatever. He's going to be fine at second, I think, and it likely moves Biggio to third, where I think he'll be the almost everyday third baseman. Vlad still wants to play over there. I don't know whether that's realistic or not. And then you point out that it gives some insurance to Bichette at short, where you don't have to end up playing Espinal at shortstop, right? Similar to Springer coming in. Yes, he's a killer. He's an all-star. But he's also created depth, whereas maybe now Randall Grichuk is your fourth outfielder, and most teams would be pretty comfortable with that, whereas last year Jonathan Davis was our fourth outfielder, and while he could cover some ground defensively, he couldn't hit for crap. So it's not just adding these players, but it's creating depth around the organization that it seems to be very much in the LA Dodgers mold, where we're going to draft and develop well, and then when it's time, we'll spend. And for the Dodgers, for the last like 5 years, it's been time. They've been spending. But before that, they did everything right. And that seems to be what the Blue Jays are doing right now. And I'm really intrigued by it. If Semien is any good this year and rebounds, and even his 2020, where his numbers were off a little, they're kind of pulled down by a terrible start. And then he was not quite what he was in 2019, but pretty close the rest of the way after the first couple of weeks. So I really like that signing. And if he gets comfortable and wants to stay, that's cool. If he doesn't, you're 1 year closer to Jordan Groshans and Austin Martin as infield prospects, being ready to step in and play, right? Like, it's okay if he's a placeholder, and it's okay if he gets comfortable and you decide you want to lock that up long term and he wants to stay too. So I think this is a fascinating deal. I really like it. You're doing this for the offense. He's going to be fine defensively at second. He's not going to be great defensively at second, but you're doing it for the offense. And I think it gives the Blue Jays, man, that, you know, you briefly had this hysteria about, oh my God, we got Springer and Michael Brantley, and then that faded away, and now you've still added Marcus Semien. Like, I think this is going to be incredible.
And when you look at his offense, like in 2019, he had 33 home runs, 10 steals, over 90 RBIs. Yeah. And I know his numbers fell in 2020, but like, who wasn't affected by 2020,
honestly,
man? Don't look at his 2020
numbers.
No, 2020
sucked. I'm not holding that against
anybody. What was going through his head? Like, I don't hold his 20. Like, I think they're hoping that he's probably somewhere closer to the 2019 numbers. But again, like, it's only a one-year deal.
Yep.
He's got to prove it. Yep. And like, if his numbers are anywhere close to 2019, then the Jays they've done right by a one-year contract that allows him to rebuild himself and get back to pre-pandemic numbers. And you know, the offense is one part of it. Like you said, the defense is a whole other part of it. And I think he gives them a lot of options, right? Moving Biggio to third, keeping Vladdy at first. I know that there's been a lot of discussions on whether or not Vladdy should be at first.
Yeah.
But now you've got an experienced infielder who can help you figure that out. Right. And you know, if he needs to go to shortstop because Bo Bichette is hurt, or maybe they want to switch things up and move Bo Bichette somewhere else, especially if Vladdy's really struggling at first, you know, they have these options now. And, you know, we've talked a lot about whether or not Ross Adkins and Mark Shapiro are willing to spend money. Well, I think they've proven with a resounding yes, they are.
Yeah. No, the money's there. Clearly.
And one thing, I honestly just read about this, so I don't have a whole lot of background on it, but it looks like the Jays are also going to be trading for Steven Matz from the New York Mets. So there's another kind of big addition that a lot of people were, as I understand it anyway, this was a pretty highly anticipated trade.
I'm I think so. I got to tell you, I'm less high on it. To me, the Jays have enough number six starters who might top out at number four starters. Like, we kind of have a lot of that. I didn't hate it. I think as much as anything, the reason they did it was they traded two guys off their 40 man for one guy, and that allowed them space to sign, to make the Semien signing official, you know, bodies in, bodies out kind of thing. I don't hate it. They gave up what some people are calling prospects that are old enough that they're minor leaguers. Like, at some point you got to make that distinction, right? Like, are they eventually going to make it? Maybe Sean Reed Foley would be the biggest one, but he's just never shown that he was going to have enough control. His fastball was pretty good, mid to high 90s he could touch, but no control. And so maybe that's going to be better suited in the bullpen. Yonzi Diaz is the other guy that's going, that had a recognizable name. I don't remember the third guy. He was fairly irrelevant for Matz. And we'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong. The Blue Jays seem to have this ego, and sometimes it's been rightly placed, that they can take your guy and turn him around. And we've seen it with Robbie Ray, right? We've seen it with Ross Stripling. It worked pretty well with Robbie Ray, and I think they're counting on him to be a part of it, and maybe that's just their confidence in Pete Walker and the way he does things, his kind of mixture of analytics and traditional old school baseball approach, that maybe he'll be able to help Steven Matz get back to what he was. I think this one was more about clearing up a roster space than anything else. I don't see this as a big move. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, because 2 or 3 years ago he did look like he was going to be something, and it just never quite materialized.
I'll be honest, I don't have a whole lot of background on his career so far, but
Well, for 2 or 3 years he's been getting hit around in the NL East, and now you're coming to the AL East, so buckle up, right?
Seriously, good luck.
Yeah.
All I'll say is, as a Jays fan, like, I could not be more excited for the season to start at this point. Between the George Springer, the Kirby Yates, yep. and now the Marcus Semien signing, yep. like, those three alone, all I remember is the George Springer signing basically making baseball experts go, okay, Toronto's now scary.
Yeah. Well, Jeff and Passan today, when they were talking about Tanaka signing, and I can't even remember where now, doesn't matter. Masahiro Tanaka signed somewhere else, and they said the runner-up was the Blue Jays, and then right underneath he goes, but you should assume the Blue Jays literally are in on everyone right now. Like, they're, that's the impression that the Toronto Blue Jays have left on baseball insiders across the league. They are in on everything right now.
It's wild. And again, like, we were a couple of weeks away from talking about, are they willing to spend money? Yes.
It would appear so.
Yes,
and I was the first guy to have to come out on here, right, and say, I think you were the one on with me at the time, as a guy who doubted Mark Shapiro and Ross Adkins, all the, they have shown that what they said all along was correct. We have to rebuild the system. We have to develop from within. We have to get the cupboard restocked. And when it's time, the money will be there and we'll spend. And here we are, while all these kids are still making nothing, right? Biggio and Bichette and Guerrero are still making nothing. You go out and you sign all these guys to come in, and they're a contender in the AL East right now. I don't love their rotation still. I think it's a simple to get in the mix. I don't think you have to do anything more than go and get back Taiwan Walker, who still hasn't signed and looked okay as a J. I don't think he's a shutdown playoff number two, whatever, but for now, just to solidify things, I would make that move and then go into the season and feel pretty good. And then if you're as good as you think you're going to be and as good as it looks like they will be, you know, maybe go and try and find your big fish pitcher at the deadline.
And, well, that's the thing. Like, we've seen how easily the Jays can bring in a Cy Young candidate.
Yeah.
Like they did last year in Hojin Ryu.
Yeah.
Like, I'll agree with you there. Like, I'm not overly sold on their pitching right now.
No.
I think that's the one area they need to address if they're going to be a legitimate contender. But I feel pretty comfortable with Hojin Ryu up front.
Yep.
And they need to fill in some gaps, basically, like you said, in the rotation. You know, maybe beef up the bullpen a little bit. Sure. But
I mean, what's Nate Pearson about to be? We don't know yet, but
exactly.
Signs point pretty good. Taiwan Walker, you know, maybe if you have a lineup that good, you only need to have an average staff. Like we'll see. I'm fascinated. I think they've done enough over the winter here to just lock it down, be reasonable on the pitching side, and then if you are every bit as good as you thought you were going to be, then figure it out in season when more teams will be looking to ditch money. And right now the Jays aren't one of those. They're willing to spend. So get that done.
God,
that's where I'm at on that. I'm so stoked, man. I'm so ready for baseball.
Just stay home and get vaccinated so we can all go to a baseball game.
Honestly.
All I want to do is sit in a baseball park and eat a hot dog and drink beer and watch baseball.
Just bring me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I ever get back, Michaela. That's where I'm at.
Careful what you wish for.
I know. No, really, I'm a man of simple pleasures. That's all I need.
Speaking of baseball, I don't know how passionate you are about Hall of Fame discussions.
Mm.
Because people get really passionate about this. But the Baseball Hall of Fame is not electing anybody into the Hall of Fame this year because no one came within the percentage that they need to, as I understand in my Baseball Hall of Fame research this week. But the closest person was one Curt Schilling, who in his ninth year now on the Hall of Fame ballot has asked for his name to be removed because after 9 years of no one electing him in, he's decided that now he doesn't want to be in.
I don't want to come to your party.
Until, and I quote, the people whose opinions actually matter start to come into play because they go into the like historical era, whatever it is, evaluation.
Yeah, there's like an alumni group who gets to vote if the writers don't put you in for 10 years. And
he's waiting for it to go to the old boys club is what he's waiting for it to do. So he asked for his name to be removed. They said, no, it's been this whole thing. Where do you fall on the Curt Schilling situation right now?
I think there's two things there, and you asked me about the most prominent one. So if you'll just give me a sec. First of all, I love that they didn't elect anyone this year. The Baseball Hall of Fame, to me, is the hardest to get into, and that's what makes it the best. It's the most prestigious. It's the most... You have no third-line left-wingers in there like you do in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Are you telling me Guy Carboneau isn't in the Baseball
Hall of Fame? Well, I don't want to name names, but yes, Guy Carboneau, get the hell out, right? And there's some Leafs like that. I'm sorry, but I've had this conversation 100 times with Rob over the years with Wendell Clark and Doug Gilmore. I think the jersey retirement is for your fan base and the Hall of Fame is for the elite. I don't have Doug Gilmore or Wendell Clark in my Hockey Hall of Fame. I have them as no-brainer jersey retirements for the Leafs, right? I think it's okay to honor people who mattered in your market without having them be recognized in the absolute. Now, if we're going to keep doing this Hockey Hall of Mediocrity, then sure, whatever, throw whoever you want in there. I don't get, but I love about baseball that it's hard to get in, and it has to be 75% of the voters that say, yeah, you're going in. And this year, no one reached 75%, so nobody goes in, and I'm totally fine with that. I think it holds up the the integrity of the hall. Before I move into Schilling, do you have a take on that? Should you be forced to put somebody in every year? Are you good with nobody being good enough this year?
No, I'm completely good with it. I think it's ridiculous that, like, what's the point of a Hall of Fame if you're meant to hit a quota every year? Like, that's not the Hall of Fame. That's the Hall of, hey, you retired this
year. Yeah, exactly. You retired 5 years ago and you were the best of that class, so you go in.
I know that Hall of Fame discussions can be complicated because everyone has such passionate opinions about them, but the Hall of Fame is for greatness and it's for elite. And I like that. I do like that baseball has that standard and makes it like, no, just because you're the best of that crop does not mean you're getting in, son.
No.
And I am very much okay with that.
Yeah. And, I made a couple of Maple Leaf references in Ottawa. I got no beef at all with a Chris Phillips or a Chris Neal having their jersey retired in Ottawa. Those were infinitely popular players in that market who put in serious minutes and miles for that team. Neither of them have any business in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Hockey Hall of Fame. But they were beloved in that city, and there's no reason for those cities not to honor them. I think those are two different things, and they should be allowed to be so.
Absolutely. Now, Daniel Alfredson.
Well, yeah. All right. We don't have enough time on today's show to enter that debate, I don't think.
This is what, like, AJ and I were talking about this on the air this week. The Hall of Fame discussion is never ending.
No.
You start a Hall of Fame conversation and you may never get out of it.
No. That's it.
It will go on forever, but to stick to baseball.
Yeah.
Yes, I am with you. I don't think that just because you are the best of said group, you should get in.
Right.
I'm glad they didn't elect anybody, and I'm definitely glad they didn't elect Curt Schilling.
So Curt Schilling, as you suggest, and look, I don't think either one of us would question. I shouldn't say that. I don't question that he was good enough of a baseball player, right? Like, he was dominant for a long time. What he did in Boston, what he did in Arizona when he came back, like in the bloody sock game, whatever that was, the whole thing was all about. I do think Curt Schilling was a good enough baseball player to get in. The problem seems to arise from the fact that he's a piece of shit human being. And the Baseball Hall of Fame already has a lot of piece of shit human beings in there. Ty Cobb being chief amongst them. And so we enter this debate about what should that matter? And Curt Schilling's whole thing about, I want to be let out. And it's this whole, it's like when you're 11 years old and David doesn't invite you to his birthday party. And there's no real David. I didn't want to go anyway. David, get the hell out of here.
I'll wait till Alex invites me to his birthday party. Only guy whose opinion matters.
um, to me, that's where this gets ridiculous. Curt Schilling understands he's not getting in. They're not voting him in his last year of eligibility. As you suggest, you have 10 years. He's 9 years in. He's not getting in. So in this, well, I guess I'll just save my own ego and say, well, I don't want to be in your stupid club. Please take me out of consideration for next year. That's crap. But I do run into an issue, and Shai Davidi's been on the radio covering the Blue Jays a few times saying it's not that he's a Trump supporter, which he is, because Mariano Rivera is like friends with Donald Trump and got in like almost unanimously. If you're good enough, no one cares who your friends
and I'm
are.
I'm pretty sure if you went through the list of Hall of Famers,
yeah, there's some, as we've mentioned, there's some troubling names and personality traits in there. His issue, Schilling's issue, is that he's on there all the time calling out a lot of things. So there's some racist stuff. There's some homophobic stuff. It's not that he's a Republican. It's not that he's a Trump supporter. It's that he's saying some awfully bad shit right now during a global pandemic where we need people to get on the same page. And Shai Davidi has said as much. His exact words were, I don't know if that's somebody I want to give a megaphone to right now. And that, Michaela, that troubles me, because this is the Baseball Hall of Fame. And in 10 years, 30 years, 50 years, 200 years, however long this thing stands, people aren't going to remember the pandemic of 2020 and whether or not you were well spoken about it. They want to see the best of the best in terms of baseball. And while I think Curt Schilling is a piece of shit, I do think he's a good enough baseball player to be in, and I'm uncomfortable with the idea that certain voters are keeping him out because, you know, like, I don't even know if I'm uncomfortable with it. I just think it's weird that this is supposed to be the Baseball Hall of Fame where Ty Cobb is in there, but Curt Schilling tweets things that make us mad, and we go, then you're not going to be recognized for your baseball accomplishments. I have a feeling you may treat me differently than you did in the women's thing here. Am I out to lunch on this one?
Stuff is complicated, man.
Yes.
No, like, listen, here's my thing. I don't know much about how long Curt Schilling has been a vocal, you know,
douchebag.
Trump supporter. Douchebag.
Yes.
But he's been on the ballot for 9 years.
Yep.
Basically my question is, how long has him being a douchebag been a factor?
Okay. Yeah. No, and that's fair.
And I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know enough about, I'll be honest, I wasn't a baseball fan when Curt Schilling was playing.
Right.
So, like, I've only been following baseball for a couple of years. I don't know enough about Curt Schilling to say yes or no definitively he is a Hall of Famer. I'll trust your judgment on his stats and his play may have indicated as such. I mean, I really want to have them elect him into the Hall of Fame next year and see what he does.
Yeah, no, of course. Like,
oh, you want to be taken off the ballot? Here, now you're in. What do you want to do now?
Yeah, I guess I like your party again.
But, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I'm going to come now, David. Now thank you. This is like David's mom forcing him to invite me to his birthday party. That never really happened. There's no David.
Honestly, this is my thing. Like, you haven't been elected for 9 years. You've been on the ballot for 9 years and no one's put you in the Hall of Fame. Now, when you have 1 year left, you take your ball and you go home.
I agree with that. He comes off like a total baby.
Like, come on, man. Like, I don't know that, you know, the reasons behind them not letting him in. I agree with you. If it's on baseball merit alone, okay, then, like, why are you holding some people to this standard but not right. others?
Like, Shai Davidi, I assume, like, I really respect Shai. I love the work that he does. I don't love that he said, I don't want to give the guy a megaphone right now. Well, that's not what I'm asking you to do. I'm asking you to pick Hall of Famers. I'm uncomfortable with that part of it.
But I also, just given where we are right now with it being so sensitive, and, you know, we need people to essentially, like, to get out of this, we need people to get vaccinated.
Yes.
Right. And we need people to trust public health.
Yep.
And we need people to trust doctors when they're telling us something. And when you have someone who is amplifying the opposite of that, yep. is it the best thing for us in this global pandemic right now?
It is absolutely not.
No.
But in 100 years, when you visit Cooperstown, will they care about that?
Again, stuff can be two things.
Yeah.
Right? Like these are, and I don't know what the answer is. Maybe let him wait a few years and let the old boys club elect him in, and then he'll, you know, graciously accept it. But, you know, right now, if it means us having a better chance of getting out of this pandemic because we don't give someone else who's a COVID hoaxer or whatever he is a megaphone, I can't argue against that. I just want to go to a baseball game, man.
I know. No, and you're right. It's complicated. I think he's a bad person. I think he's a great pitcher. And you're asking, this to me is so different than the steroid debate where you just get to decide, you know, and I know that was hard on writers too, but do we care whether you were a steroid user or not? To me, this is very different. You are asking people to vote on, you know, baseball Hall of Fame worthy pitcher versus just total asshole, right? And I think you're right. We don't need Curt Schilling standing up at the Baseball Hall of Fame ceremony saying, I'm very honored to be here. Don't wear a mask. And at the same time, I am torn with the idea that reporters are making their own criteria of, yeah, you might have been a good enough pitcher, but I think your message sucks, so you're not in. And I think that gets, like you said, stuff can be two things, which is obviously going to be the title of this episode.
It is different, but I'm interested in where you fall on the steroid era folks like Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and his name is escaping me right now.
Sammy Sosa.
Sammy Sosa, thank you.
I've been more willing to leave that up to the writers. I personally think that there is no way retroactively to prove who did it and who didn't. And so do what you want. I don't hold it against writers who want to leave people out. I don't hold it against writers who go, ah, they all were doing it, so everybody's eligible. If you forced me to vote, knowing that I can't prove that Barry Bonds didn't face 65% pitchers that were juiced to the gills, I'd probably do it. I'd probably allow the guys with the numbers that back up, you know, their careers into the hall. And I just think when you look back at some of the people that they've elected over the years and some of the stories behind those guys, you just go, you know, it's the Hall of Fame. Did you do great things? Yes. Are there questions about who you were as a person? Yes. Do I want to get into those? Probably not. So
that's the thing. When you're talking about a steroid era, like a period of time in which pretty much everyone in your league was doing steroids, are you setting yourself up for just having an
Barry Bonds, greatest hitter of that era, he's not getting in because he did the juice. You have no idea how many pitchers he faced who were on the juice.
Exactly.
And it stinks.
Like, if it's an era, was it not all the same playing field?
Exactly.
And we're going to head into that again. Like A-Rod is up in a couple years.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And I know that most people think that, okay, A-Rod's not getting in, but he was one of the most dynamic and popular players in the league for a long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was on the sauce, but so was Barry Bonds, and so was Mark McGwire, and so was Roger.
He played against. No, you're so right. Like,
AJ brought up a really good point on the air this week. Is like, you can't ignore your history. Like, look at the way Germany handles it. It's a very dark comparison, but look at the way Germany handles the Holocaust. Like, if you just erase a part of your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Yep.
Why not have them in the Hall of Fame? Have an asterisk next to their name and explain why.
Yep.
And let your fans learn why.
Yeah.
And I get that baseball is trying to, you know, they're trying to attract younger fans right now. And I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, is highlighting all the warts of your history a good idea to attract them? Well, is hiding them any better? Like, they're going to,
you know, find what's going to attract young fans? 700-foot home runs. Get on the sauce. Get on the juice. Let's do this.
Come on, boys. but you can't ignore this part of your history. It happened. Like, Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame. Ugh. And this all happened under his watch.
No, you're so right there. It's
come on, man. You this
it's,
is a
it's so complicated. Like, it's so hard to and so for some reason, I've been more willing. I don't know. I've been more willing on the steroid thing to just go, whatever you guys think, right? Like, we all know they did it, and whatever you want to do with that information is up to you. This one, for some reason, just hits different to me. I think Curt Schilling's an asshole. But for me, his numbers are there, his performance is there, and that's a Hall of Fame guy. And there's no suggestion about the steroids thing. This is and again, I'm only going with this one reporter, but he's one that I respect. When I hear Shai Davidi, who I know has a vote, go, I don't want to give him a megaphone right now, that's not what I want to hear. That's not your call. Is he good enough to get into the Hall of Fame or isn't he? And I don't like he probably is, but I don't want him to talk about the pandemic or politics at the Hall of Fame. Well, you know, like, to me, that's very different. And I think that opens a dangerous door where maybe very few people, if we're going to do this down political lines, no one's getting a 75%.
No kidding. Honestly. And I will say this, like, if you're going to make a case to elect Curt Schilling into the Hall of Fame, fine, do it at a time where his voice is less damaging.
Well, but that's not maybe on the table. Like,
well, when the old boys club can vote.
Yeah,
him in.
No, you're right. And there is that
now we'll be out of this.
Yeah, no, and you're right. Oh, ideally, not if Curt Schilling's people have anything to say about it.
My ideal world is, yeah, okay, we all get vaccinated. We're all back to normal. Maybe by the end of 2021, let's say, or as close to normal as we can get.
Yeah.
The Baseball Hall of Fame voting comes up this time next year and Curt Schilling gets in. What does he do? That's my idea.
No, I know. It's incredible for him to go, your organization sucks. Like you said, I'm not coming to your stupid party. Now? Well, we invited you now.
That's how he gets
know.
It. Yeah. That's my ideal world. Provided we're out of this, that's my ideal world.
I can get on board with that.
Right?
Yeah.
See, then we all win. It's a win-win. Across the board.
We get to call another hypocrite a hypocrite.
Exactly. Then we can talk about how much we hate him.
Yes.
Even though he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right.
One more thing before we start to wrap things up. But, I mean, hockey continues on. We talked about this earlier on in the podcast, but the Sens have been playing late night after late night game and getting – losing a collective 12-2 in their scoring in the last two games. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I stayed up for that.
Sure is.
But on the Leafs side, some interesting stuff has been happening in their series against the Flames. Some drama took place when Matthew Tkachuk, quote unquote, fell.
Yes.
Was on Jack Campbell very dramatically.
Yeah.
I will say fell on Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell is now hurt. And in the subsequent game, a win for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jake Muzzin just ever so slightly flipped the puck at Matthew Tkachuk, and Matthew Tkachuk did not like that.
No.
And, you know, threw a bit of a temper tantrum, tried to fight people. Nothing really happened.
Tried to knock over water bottles that wouldn't be knocked over.
Yeah, knocked over the water bottles on the video. Slammed the door on Giordano. Not too sure why. Giordano's still wondering what the hell he did, but there's been a lot made of this, which I think is just so funny.
Honestly.
It's the most minuscule thing.
Yeah.
But as a Leaf fan, I imagine you were pretty happy to witness this.
I was. And what Jake Muzzin did was a total dick move. Like, what a douchebag.
And let's not forget, he did it at the very end of the game.
Yeah, the Leafs had already won. Yes.
Game's done. You don't have to actually answer to this guy for the rest of the game, and you're not playing him next game. Like,
no.
This was very intentionally, hey, this is the least impact you can have.
Yes.
Here you go.
No, and that's exactly it. So think what you want about the Matthew Tkachuk on Jack Campbell spinal knee drop thing. I think that's a shitty thing to do. He says an accident. That guy has, I guess, a lot of accidents around the league. Whatever. So we go through the whole next game. And in my mind, the Leafs do exactly what they should do, which is pretty much ignore him all night when he was expecting chaos, win, and then give him the finger at the end. And he melted down over it. Was Jake Muzzin gonna, like, did that move
nominate him for the Lady Bing. It did not. It was a dick thing to do, but no one was going to get hurt, right? It wasn't being slapped at him. And you could see Matthew Tkachuk tries to reach out and grab it, and he misses it, and then he swings at it with his stick and misses it, and it, the whole thing was pretty embarrassing. But I don't necessarily like the fact that at the end of the game they gave Jake Muzzin a 2-minute misconduct. Like, all right, like, yeah, that's probably fair. But to me, if you want to walk around and claim to be, and I don't know if he claims to be, although I know he does love it, Matthew Tkachuk, the Calgary fans love to also claim King passed. You wish you had him on your team. Yeah, kind of, sometimes. If you're going to be that guy and then you're going to melt down that hard over something as whatever, you know, unimportant as a lightly flipped puck off your chest, you look ridiculous. And that's the part of it that I like. I like the Flames fans who went on ad nauseum after the first game with the knee drop to the spine saying, it was an accident and, you know, you shouldn't even respond. That's just Matthew Tkachuk. It was you're just pointing fingers at a guy that you hate. And then and saying he got under your skin, and then going out, playing a game, beating him, and he was fairly ineffective in that game, and then doing something that made him melt down like that at the end of the game, that's perfect. And then having all those same fans who said that Matthew Tkachuk got under Leaf fan skins screaming that it was a classless thing. There's no class in the NHL anymore, Michaela. There's no class. No. And that's where that lands. Not to mention, there is a history, a little bit, between Muzzin and Tkachuk. A couple years ago, Tkachuk had that thing with Drew Doughty, and Muzzin was his partner at the time. So there was some back and forth there. I thought it was a douche thing for Jake Muzzin to do, but it was done in a similar pest way that Matt Tkachuk likes to do things. And then Matthew Tkachuk made himself look... I think that's the worst thing you can do to a pest, is they badly want to get that reaction out of you that makes you do something stupid. You don't give them that, and then they do the stupid thing they wanted you to do. Because there is nothing. Do you follow John Boy on Twitter? He normally does the baseball videos.
No.
Okay. So he.
Oh, no. Yes, I saw this video. Yes. Yeah.
So he, Matt, John Boy breaks down the whole thing and the swipe with the glove. And that would have been perfect. Like Matthew Tkachuk, if he manages to grab the puck before it hits him with his glove, he now gets to say to Muzzin, yeah, fuck you, right? Like you're. But he kind of misses it, and then he misses it with his stick, and then he turns and tries to knock over the, I guess, magnetic water bottle, and that doesn't work. And then, like you said, he slams the door on his own captain. Like, the whole thing was just hilarious. And I think that's the best thing you can do to a pest, is just, we don't care about you, and then watch them kind of... That's my very blue take. That's my Maple Leaf take. I don't think what happened with Campbell was an accident. I don't think it was on Wayne Simmonds to beat the shit out of him at the beginning of the next game and cost us, you know, 5 minutes shorthanded. You go, you beat him, you don't respond to him, he plays poorly, and then you kind of flip him off at the end and go, there, that's what we think of you. That's my Leaf take on that.
No, I'm with you, man. Like, Matthew Tkachuk has got to be able, if he's going to dish it, you have to take it.
Yeah.
Like, and this is a, this is what Jake Muzzin did is something that Matthew Tkachuk would do.
Yes.
And Matthew Tkachuk just got a taste of his own medicine, and it didn't taste good.
No,
it was
so no, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to get back their own. Like, that sucks, right? That's hard.
And he threw like a legitimate temper tantrum, and a lot of people are saying, like, where were his teammates? Why weren't his teammates defending him? Well, no one who was on the ice was really like a, you know.
Yeah, they had pulled their goalie. They were 6-on-5 against the Leafs, so you had. you know, Lindholm and Monahan, and like, you had nobody out there who was going to back him up because of the situation. And I think half of them had their back turned skating off because the game was over.
Yeah. Like, I'm not reading too much into that, but I thought it was hilarious to watch him single-handedly try to fight every single one of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's hysterical.
And yeah, like, come on, man. If you're going to be a pest, when someone's a pest back to you, you got to learn to read. Yep. You're giving them the exact reaction you're hoping for when you do these things.
And that's
right?
And that's it for me, right? It's all context. Was Jake Muzzin cool? No. But who he did it to in the situation he did, I'm like, all right, that's fine. Right? Like, that's a dick move for a dick move. Carry on.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, with that, I that's pretty much everything I had on my end. I don't know if there's anything else you want to hit on before we wrap things up.
I think that's about it. I know you've had quite a bit of sports talk. I am glad you managed to slum it with us for a little bit after a week back on the radio.
This place has beer.
Exactly.
This is still fun for me. This is
I was listening
hour.
A lot. I was waiting at like 12:02 coming back from break to hear if there was going to be a crack in the background that you were trying to hide or something. But
we did give you a shout out at one point. I think we mentioned one of the tweets you'd sent us, and AJ even said, well, that place has beer. So,
okay. Damn. I missed that one. All right. Well, glad.
Yeah, this no, it's this is always fun for me. And
as you said, I mentioned on Twitter, listening to one of Tall Can Audio's hosts, being you, and one of TCA's regular guests in AJ, doing the show together, and kind of sounds better without me. It's like a really good episode of Tall Can Audio.
Oh, please.
It's fun. It was great to hear you. I thought you were great on the radio this week, and everybody knows you, you know your stuff. So it was cool to hear that opportunity come around again, and we're all just waiting for the time to return where we get a little more of That's What She Said.
Yes. Yeah, me too. Well, I will be back on the air next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe. Same time slot, 10 to 2. So
TSN happy 1200.
TSN 1200. Yeah, very happy to be doing that. And of course, you can always hear me on Tall Can Audio on Friday mornings or Thursday nights, depending on when it comes out.
Depending on when Matt gets his crap together and gets that posted.
The morning is all that matters, man. It's the Friday morning. Everyone wants to go into the weekend with us.
No doubt.
And with that, we will let you head into your weekend. And thank you all so much for listening. As always, you can find Tall Can Audio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shrides, Shreids. And we will see you next time on Tall Can Audio.
Peace.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.